Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. And as always, you can find us on the 101.3 ESPN app simply by going to the Apple Store, also to the Google Play Store. You can find us there. And if you're using an Amazon Echo and you've got your, I won't say her name because then she's going to play, but if you've got your Amazon Echo or your Echo Dot or your smart speaker, just ask to stream WCPV 101.3 FM, and then you will find us as well. We got a full show tonight going up until 7 o'clock, and then Red Sox baseball comes your way at 9:20. The 16-2 Sox taking on the Oakland A's. Things coming up next week on the show and on the station. Remember, Tuesday night, trivia night at the Burger Bar in Colchester, 7:30 to 9:30. They'll have half-price apps and great drink specials. Wednesday, broadcasting live at the UPS store, Carmichael Street in Essex. And they'll continue to do that free document shredding up to 5 pounds for you as tax day now in our rear. So coming up today, we've got plenty of stuff coming up on the show. We've got a great show lined up for you, including Kyle Haskins, who's going to stop by for a couple of minutes in this hour. He's a Huntington, Vermont native, just committed to play hockey at Michigan State. We'll talk with Justin Martin of the Vermont Sports Hall of Fame. They've got their induction tomorrow. Something I said last week that is absolutely coming to fruition tonight. So I don't want to play I told you so, but it's very interesting that after we talked about it last week, it is happening today as well. And we'll talk about some great coaching adjustments as we continue to praise Brad Stevens as we get ready for Game 3 of that Celtics-Bucks series. But first, Super Troopers 2 opened today. Is anybody seeing it? 802-655-6672. Super Troopers 1 is in the vein of movies. Number one, I cannot believe Super Troopers 1 came out in 2001. If you had asked me when it came out, I would have said like 2006. I have no idea that it was 2001. And I know it holds special meaning up here because it's based in Vermont. I know the town that Super Troopers 1 was in was a fictional town, but I never would have guessed that it was back in 2001. Super Troopers 1 is in the vein of movies that I consider they're so stupid, they're funny. And Anchorman's in that, and Old School, and some of those Will Ferrell movies, and maybe some Adam Sandler movies. They kind of all fall into that vein for me. Super Troopers was a movie that I loved at first. I absolutely loved it. And then every time I watched it, I felt like it got worse and worse until eventually I stopped watching Super Troopers altogether, and I hated it for a while. And then I watched it recently for the first time in probably 5 or 6 years. I watched it recently within the last month, and I enjoyed it again. It's not a movie I can do a bunch of, but I'm curious, who's going to see Super Troopers 2? Have you already seen it? If you saw it, what was it like? Are you going to see it? Town Fair Tire text line 802-655-6672. Some of these scenes, though, in Super Troopers, they are iconic, even though they got worse to me. Remember the scene where it was right at the beginning of the movie where the police officer goes to the he pulls someone over, and they say, "We'll play the cat game." He says, "How many times can you say meow?" That's kind of the iconic thing in Super Troopers. How many times can you say meow in this pullover, in this pulling over of the passenger?
All right, meow. Hand over your license and registration. Your registration? Hurry up, meow.
Sorry.
There's something funny here, boy?
No.
Well, then why are you laughing, Mr. Larry Johnson? All right, meow, where were we?
I'm sorry, are you saying meow?
Am I saying meow?
I thought you...
Don't think, boy. Meow, do you know how fast you were going? Meow, what is so damn funny?
I could have sworn you said meow.
Do I look like a cat to you, boy? Am I jumping around all nimbly bimbly from tree to tree?
No.
Am I drinking milk from a saucer?
No.
Do you see me eating mice?
That's one of the iconic scenes. If that's not the most iconic scene, then maybe it's this one where they're ordering from the fast food place.
Give me a liter of cola.
A what?
A liter of cola.
Liter of cola? Do we make liter of cola?
Will you just order a large Farva?
I don't want a large Farva. I want a liter of cola.
I don't know what that is.
Liter of cola, the large Farva, two of the iconic scenes from Super Troopers. I will see the second one. I have no idea if it will be any good, but I will see it. Again, Champlain Valley Game Night going up until 7 o'clock, 101.3 ESPN. The Red Sox are 16-2, and again, they'll play tonight. Drew Pomeranz makes his first start against the Oakland A's. And I have spent a lot of time trying to impart the sense of urgency that this Red Sox team has. And I've said it over and over again. This is a team that is in an absolute win-now mode because of what's coming down the road. Players are going to continue to get older, like David Price. Players are going to hit free agency, like Craig Kimbrel, after this season. Young players are going to want more money as their arbitration years wind down, like Xander Bogaerts and Mookie Betts. Chris Sale's going to need more money. What about Dustin Pedroia's health? There's a real sense of urgency here to win. But today, I walked in and I was like, you know what, Brady? I have led the charge on trying to have the reality with this team about what's coming. But today, we just got to sit back and enjoy it. If you are a Red Sox fan, sit back and enjoy what they are doing. I'm telling you that it's okay. They're 16-2. Don't worry about the future. Don't worry about the Yankees. Don't worry about the Blue Jays. Don't worry about the schedule getting tougher. Don't worry about any of that. If you are a Red Sox fan, don't be pessimistic today. I've been pessimistic about the long-term vision of this team for a while now, but sit back and enjoy what is going on. The Red Sox right now have the second greatest run differential through 18 games in the live ball era. That's since 1920. The Red Sox right now are plus 66 through 18 games. Plus 66. That is unheard of. Only the 93 Tigers were better. They were plus 67. Enjoy what they are doing. They're the fourth team since 1900 to go, or they're one of seven teams, rather, since 1900 to start 16-2 or better. Since 1900, seven teams have been 16-2 or better, and the Red Sox of 2018 are one of them. Enjoy it, because it doesn't happen very often. Teams come in with expectations, and they often stumble out of the gate. Like the Yankees are 9-8 right now. Maybe the Yankees will win the World Series, but they're not on that pace that we thought they were. We thought going into last football season that the Patriots, when they added Brandon Cooks, that they were going 16-0. We thought that was a real possibility. And what happens? They lost in their first game of the year. Not only did they lose, they got beat by double digits by Kansas City. And it was, you know, that thought was over. The Red Sox fans right now should be embracing this because look at what this team has done. Plus 66 in the run differential. Plus 66. And I understand things are going to normalize. That's the way that it is. Things will normalize. They will not play 900 ball the entire year. That is a guarantee to you. But everything that could go right for this team practically has gone right, and it's gone right to the extreme, so you should enjoy it. Mookie Betts now has 13 leadoff homers in his career. How many does he have this season? Multiple. He did it twice in this series against the Angels alone. That just doesn't happen. That just doesn't happen. Hanley Ramirez has come back. People were ready to banish him from the organization. Tom Caron of Nesson told us in spring training that he thought we were getting to the end of Hanley Ramirez and that he could be DFA'd like Pablo Sandoval was midseason. Hasn't happened. He's hit over 300, and he's in the top five in the American League in RBIs. Unbelievable. How about the continued development of Rafael Devers? I was the one who said one of the biggest storylines about this spring training was going to be, what does Devers do for an encore? Half a season, did well, got some tape on him. I saw him sit in the other day on a left-handed curveball, a good one, from Tyler Skaggs, drive it to right field and hit a grand slam. Sophomore players, 21-year-old players, don't do that. Rafael Devers did it, and he hasn't regressed. He has not regressed from last year. It's been impressive. How about the rebirth of David Price, who's turned in three really good starts? How about the rebirth of Rick Porcello, who's walked 1% of batters that he's faced this year? He has one walk this season. Minuscule ERA. Who saw that coming? We knew he wasn't the 22-4 guy that won the Cy Young last year, but he's also better than the guy that was unbearable and allowed a league-best 38 homers last year. He's at the extreme high end right now of what his capabilities are, and we'll get into why. J.D. Martinez has been the free agent acquisition that you wanted. He's put up the numbers that Giancarlo Stanton hasn't, if you're a Yankee fan. Enjoy it. It's okay to enjoy it. Don't worry about the long term. And I understand that New England fans have the reputation of being pessimistic and saying what can go wrong will go wrong. Don't have that today. This team very easily could have gone into Anaheim and fallen victim to Ohtani mania. And instead, they put the screws to Shohei Ohtani, and they got him out after two innings. Impressive, impressive stuff. 16-2, they go for 17-2 tonight. We'll have the coverage for you against Oakland at 9:20. It's Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Undoubtedly, part of the reason why the Red Sox are better is because of coaching and managerial style of Alex Cora. Well, the same is said for the Boston Celtics, because Brad Stevens is excellent. Simply put, he's excellent. We've heard it from everybody, whether it was Ryan Rucco, who covers the NBA as a play-by-play guy for ESPN. Sean Grandy talked to us earlier this year, voice of the Celtics on radio. We talked to former Celtic Walter McCarty this week. They have all come back and said, Brad Stevens is awesome. He is the real deal. And the adjustments that Brad Stevens continues to make continue to be impressive, and they prove his worth as a coach. Let me tell you how in sync the Celtics are right now with their coach. Listen to these numbers. According to NBA.com, the Celtics have averaged 351 passes through the first two games of their series. They have passed the ball, on average, 351 times per game. That number may not mean a ton to you, but it is a wide margin greater than the number two team. It's 50 more passes a game than the Celtics averaged during the regular season. And what does that mean? That means that with Kyrie Irving, as great as he is, and now this is no knock on Kyrie because I think Kyrie is my favorite player to watch in the NBA. No, I know he is. But when you have a ball-dominant guard, when you have an isolation player who's as good as Kyrie Irving is, guess what? There is less ball movement. There is more standing around. Kyrie dominates the ball. Kyrie has it on the top of the key. He stutter step, jabs, dribble crossover. He gets to the lane, and that's it. And the shot goes up. That's what isolation ball is, and that's what a lot of the NBA is. And Brad Stevens has said, in the absence of Kyrie Irving, in the playoffs, in the absence of an isolation player, in the absence of a ball-dominant player that can score at will, we're going to have an offense predicated on ball movement, predicated on getting the defense moving, and predicated on getting good shots. And the players have bought into that. Jason Tatum isn't looking to go one-on-one. Jaylen Brown isn't looking to go one-on-one. Al Horford's not saying, I'm the veteran leader. Let me get my shots now that Kyrie's gone. We need my scoring. Nope. These guys trust each other. Swing the ball around the perimeter. Get to the lane and drive and kick. Get the defense moving. It is textbook basketball what the Celtics are doing right now. And we saw this same thing last year. When Isaiah Thomas got hurt in the Eastern Conference Finals against Cleveland, instantly, I don't remember the number, but the Celtics passes per game, shot through the roof because Isaiah was no longer dominating the ball. The Celtics last year were better with Isaiah Thomas. The Celtics this year are better with Kyrie Irving. But Brad Stevens' ability to make adjustments and his ability to change the game plan and get an offense predicated on ball reversal and ball movement has worked, and his team has bought in. And the Milwaukee Bucks right now are left scrambling defensively, and that has created good shot after good shot after good shot. The Celtics hit 13 threes in game two. The Celtics hit 13 threes in game two against Milwaukee. That doesn't happen because one guy standing at the top of the key and just pulling. That happens because guys are driving. In addition, guys are working the ball around the perimeter, and they're getting open shots, open three-pointers, whereas the Bucks are getting some contested looks, and they're not as good a shooting team anyways. Brad Stevens has this team in sync. It's incredibly impressive, and I still think in a close game, the Celtics might be in some problems because of free throw shooting at the end of the game, not having Kyrie, defensive communications, leadership. They could still be in some issues. But I'll eat my words on Monday, from Monday, where I said they were in definite trouble without Kyrie, because Brad Stevens is making up for that. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Justin Martin of the Vermont Sports Hall of Fame is going to be with us in about 7 minutes from now. But first, we've got a little bit of time right now. It's an interview we've been trying to set up. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line because it's a great local story. Kyle Haskins is a name that a lot of you have probably heard but may not remember, and I'm going to tell you why you should remember it now. He is a Huntington, Vermont native. He played his freshman year of high school hockey at Rice Memorial, so that should trigger some memories. He left Rice, went to the South Kent School in Connecticut. He just recently committed to play his college hockey at Division I Michigan State and just helped lead the select program at South Kent to the national championship. Kyle Haskins is with us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Kyle, thank you for being with us. Congratulations on the title, the college commitment. Let's start with the national championship. What was that like? What was that moment like winning the title?
It was a pretty special moment. Got a lot of our school to come out and come support us on that special day, and something like we've really pushed for our whole lives, and glad to see it happen.
How about your year individually? You guys play a lot of games there. You had ridiculous point totals. I mean, 30-plus goals, 50-plus assists this year. How is that even possible?
A lot of my teammates, my line mates, are both committed. We both really work well together, and you know, I couldn't do it without them.
You played your first year, as I said, at Rice Memorial. What was that experience like?
It was a fun experience. Made a lot of friends. It was just pretty big league, some, a lot of older kids, and being the smallest guy out there wasn't really for me.
Now, you make the decision to leave Rice. You make the decision to go to the South Kent School in Connecticut. How hard was it to leave home?
It was pretty hard. I had a tough time at the beginning of my sophomore year adjusting, being away from home, but it's really benefited me in the long run, and I love it here, and I love everyone here.
Now, how much do you think that experience helped prep you for college? You're going to go to Michigan State, and you're going to continue to be away from home and out of your comfort zone. How did this experience of being at a different school like this help you get ready for college?
Being here, it's basically being in college already. Like, we're skating every day, we have a personal trainer, and we're going to class here. It's basically being like college. It's going to really help me prepare for college and for that next level.
The South Kent School has had 10 NHL players drafted. When you went there, were you thinking, look, I just want to get to a spot where I can play in college at any level? Were you thinking down the road NHL? What were your initial goals when you went there?
Definitely to find a college to play at. That was my main goal, but now trying to set my sights on maybe potentially getting drafted.
Now, we mentioned you had those great point totals this year. What are the things you think you need to work on to continue to develop your game?
Definitely getting stronger and faster, because once you get there, everyone's going to be older than you, faster than you, stronger than you, so you got to be able to keep up with them. What I think I should really work on.
Kyle, now what's your deal? You're going to Michigan State. Now tell me exactly what is happening next. Do you have to go and play juniors for 2 years before you even get to East Lansing?
I'm only going to play 1 year, it looks like, and that's what Michigan State told me.
So how did the recruitment process go for you? Why did you land on Michigan State?
Well, it started this summer when at the national camp, and once I made the Ivan Holinka team for USA, door really swung open. I had a bunch of schools talking to me, and Michigan State really came on heavy and told me I was going to be a big part of their program down the road, and they had me out for official, and I loved it there, and I knew that was the place for me.
Kyle, get you out of here on this. A question I always like to ask local athletes. You're from Huntington, Vermont, not far from us. What's the thing, outside of friends and family, what's the thing that you miss most about home? Is it a food place? Is it a place to go in town somewhere? What do you miss most?
Big fan of Al's French fries.
Yeah, that, you know what, we hear that answer a lot, though. Don't laugh. We hear that answer all the time. We'll get you out of here on this. Did you grow up going to UVM games or anything?
Yeah, always went to UVM games. Still go when I get the chance when I'm home. Love going there. Got a couple friends committed there. It's a great place.
Well, Kyle, we appreciate the time. Kyle Haskins, Huntington, Vermont native, Michigan State hockey commit for the 2019-2020 season, and just won a national title as part of the select program at the South Kent School in Connecticut. Kyle, we appreciate the time, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. There he goes, Kyle Haskins. Only had a couple of minutes today. We appreciate him making time for us. When we come back here on Champlain Valley Game Night, we will talk with Justin Martin. The Vermont Sports Hall of Fame is set to induct its sixth class ever tomorrow. Justin Martin is in studio with us to tell us how you can be a part of it also. Champlain Valley Game Night next, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back, Champlain Valley Game Night, right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Going up until 7 o'clock, a full show today. Red Sox baseball. Sox, after their sweep of the Angels, back on the field tonight, this time in Oakland, Drew Pomerantz with his first start of the year. We've got a special guest in studio now. Joining us live is Justin Martin. He's on the executive board of the Vermont Sports Hall of Fame, and they have their induction ceremony tomorrow night at Trader Duke's on Williston Road. It's the sixth class to be inducted. Justin, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. It's not often that people come and visit me in studio.
Yeah, no, it's nice to make a trip down. Always like being in the studio, and definitely happy to talk some Red Sox baseball too. If you want. I mean, what a start.
16-2. Maybe all of them are going to the Hall of Fame, but let's start tomorrow. The Vermont Sports Hall of Fame with its sixth class being inducted. Tell me about the work leading up to this point. How long is this process?
Yeah, it is a year process. So we have our induction dinner in April, and then we take a little time off, but we get going again in the summertime, and it's really kind of feeds off the year before. We get a lot of public nominations. We get a lot of nominations from various sports people throughout the state that submit their profiles for athletes they think should be inducted. And then we have last year's list that we're working off of. And so we just try to kind of formulate who that next class is going to be. Our goal is to kind of keep it in that 10 to 12 range of inductees every year. Some years are more, some years are less. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be one person from basketball, one person from baseball. It's kind of all over the map. It's really those people that we feel are ready to go in now and are deserving of that honor.
So tell me a little bit about what the criteria is to make the Vermont Sports Hall of Fame. Because we look at the list, and we'll get into that soon. You've got some people that are not from here, but have played here. Martin St. Louis is on this list who played at UVM. You have other people who are Vermont natives. How does it work? Kind of what's the criteria?
Sure. So really, if you boil it down, and it's all on our website, so people that really want to dig in on the words themselves, but it's really people that have made an effect on Vermont sports. You don't have to be from here, but at some point, maybe you're from here and you moved on. Or maybe you played here like Marty and you made a lasting effect on the community. So people that not just played sports here, but that have had a longer reverberating effect on the state of Vermont as a whole.
Can I throw in my nomination for Rich right now? Because he's been doing sports broadcasting in the state of Vermont for a while. When can I throw the nomination out?
Yeah, so as soon as we're up or our induction ceremony's done on Saturday, fill out that PDF and fire it in for Sunday. So we have a lot of sportscasters, actually one this year going in. David Morse, a longtime media sports writer from the Barry Montpelier, Times Argus, Rutland Herald area. We actually, one of our founding members, his name was Mal Bullright, recently passed away. And so we actually have named an award after Mal. He was a big time sports writer. And so anyone that has to do with media, if it's radio or print or what have you, they fall under that kind of category for Mal's award.
So I'll nominate Rich, and then someone else will nominate Arnie and me. That's how that
That's
works.
Right. That's right. Well, I don't know. You got to be 40 years old.
Oh, okay. Right? Then it's not
so,
me then.
Yeah, so you're not
Arnie's well past that, so he could he could do it.
Really? You can't tell.
Well, he would tell you that he looks like he's like 25
That's
or
right.
so.
That's right.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We're talking in studio with Justin Martin, executive board member of the Vermont Sports Hall of Fame. They've got their class induction, which is tomorrow night. Now tell us a little bit about the night tomorrow, because people can actually go to this. Tell us about how people can go and see this in action.
Yeah, sure. So anyone that wants to learn more about tomorrow evening, they can go to www.vermontsportshall.com. And so, you know, it's an open event. It's open to the public. We love to have people that are not included or not affiliated with people that are being inducted come and celebrate these athletes. You hear a lot of great stories throughout the night of how these people got here, the people that made an effect on them to push them to get to where they ended up in their sports careers. And so the dinner is at Trader Duke's on Williston Road. You can buy tickets online if you want. It's easier if you buy them in advance because we do have tables and set number seating and all that. Tickets are $75 a piece, and you know, we do take PayPal online, so that's easy. Or you can bring a check to the door as long as you register beforehand. And the reception starts at 5:30. It's like a 1 hour cocktail hour. There's heavy apps, great food from Trader Duke's, and then the dinner event starts at 6:30. It's a sit down plated dinner, usually a steak and salmon, delicious food. And then we get right into it. And tomorrow night we have 11 inductees. It'll go till probably, you know, 8:30.
So you still got Saturday night after the fact, so you can have a great local event. You still get Saturday night. We'll get the money is going to a great cause. We'll get to that in a second. You said 11 inductees. Tell us a little bit about the class. We touched on Martin St. Louis already.
Yeah, sure. So I'll just kind of run down the group. Tim Caldwell from Putney, Vermont. He's a Nordic skier. His father actually was inducted last year. He's a four-time Olympian and won 7 U.S. national individual titles. Just amazing athlete. Robbie Crouch, the Tampa Tornado, lives in South Burlington now, stock car racing. You know, if you grew up going to Catamount Speedway or Thunder Road, you definitely watch Robbie win some races there. Airborne as well. Devil's Bowl, he raced there, and then he went on and raced in the NASCAR North Series, the Busch Series, great guy, and very, very, you know, should be in the hall. Glad to see him there. Hillary Angus Klein from Stowe, Williston, freestyle skiing moguls. She was a dominant force in world's women's mogul skiing before it was a winter game. In the Olympics, she was a four-time overall World Cup champion, winning 35 events. I mean, that's just incredible. Ray Fry, St. Johnsbury, Vermont native, track and field coach, 30-year coaching career. He won 20 track and field state championships, 16 with the boys and 4 with the girls. And also, you know, won a cross country state championship.
Impressive group of people. Impressive resumes going through right here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, every year. I mean, that's probably one of the coolest things about being a part of this sports hall is learning the history of the state. You know, I'm a Vermont guy. I'm from Essex, and you know, thought I knew a lot about Vermont. Had no clue when I got started in this. How many unbelievable athletes and people that have made huge effects on not just sports here locally, but sports nationally and around the world. So it's always great to learn the different classes each year.
Justin, we'll get you out of here on this. You said the dinner starts at 5:30, the reception tomorrow 5:30, the dinner is 6:30, the event is $75, and it's not about money for the Vermont Sports Hall of Fame. This money is going to a great cause. Tell us about who you're partnered with.
Yeah, so our charitable arm is Prevent Child Abuse Vermont. It's a fantastic cause. 50% of the proceeds from tomorrow night's dinner go back to Prevent Child Abuse Vermont, and it's a great cause and something that's great to be a part of. They do a lot of walks throughout the year to raise funds, and this is just another way that they generate money to support their cause. I do have a few more. You want me to keep?
Yeah. Tell us the rest of the crew.
All right. So Matt Johnson, St. Albans basketball player, coach. He was the first Vermonter ever to be named NCAA Division I Conference Player of the Year. And then he
at what school?
At University of Vermont.
Okay.
Yeah, he was in that like 89, 90, 91, 92 range.
Okay.
In there, and then coached at Burlington High School for a bunch of years.
Yes, that's right.
Larry Killick, another basketball guy from Burlington. Again, great story. He was the only Green Mountain State product to be drafted by the NBA. It was actually the BAA at the time, selected 10th overall by the Baltimore Bullets in 1947.
Wow.
And recently in 2013 passed away at the age of 90, but just a phenomenal story. Melba Massey, Essex, athlete, coach, contributor, outstanding basketball player at Cambridge High School, and then she went on to coach seven different sports and serve as athletic director for a bunch of years. She was actually the assistant AD under Bruce Wheeler when I was at Essex many, many moons ago.
Soon Arnie's going to be in the Hall of Fame for his Williston Wednesday night exploits.
Boy.
So just forget the broadcasting aspect. He'll put himself in the Hall of Fame just for his Wednesday night.
As he should.
Let's run down the rest.
Yeah, Bobby Mitchell, a football player at the University of Vermont back in the late 60s.
Yeah.
He was one of the all-time greats. Set a number of New England and UVM records, had a phenomenal junior season in 1966. Dave Morse, as I mentioned before, media sports writer. Jen Niebling, basketball, Randolph, a standout guard for Randolph Union High School. Went on to the University of Vermont, scored 1,402 points.
1,402 more than I had in college.
At Randolph Union. And, you know, two-time all-conference guard, record-setting. She was a part of those teams with the Catamounts in the early 90s that went undefeated a couple years. Just incredible athlete. And then last but not least, Marty St. Louis, you know, UVM great, won a cup with Tampa and went on, played with the Rangers, won a gold medal with Team Canada, and has just done a ton for the sport of hockey in the state of Vermont.
Justin Martin, Executive Board Member, Vermont Sports Hall of Fame. The induction ceremony is tomorrow. It's at Trader Duke's, Williston Road, 5:30. The reception starts. You can get more online where?
www.vermontsportshall.com.
And $75 is all it costs, and you can help support the charity Prevent Child Abuse here in Vermont. So we appreciate it, Justin. Have a good event tomorrow.
Thank you, Brady. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you as well. Not often, Justin, that I get people coming in studio, so I appreciate the company here as we head towards the end of the show. Champlain Valley Game Night, when we come back, something that we talked about last week that's coming to fruition tonight. That's next, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back, Champlain Valley Game Night, final segment of the week here on a Friday. It's been a great week because this has been a full week for us here on Champlain Valley Game Night. This has been 4 out of 5 full shows for us this week. Normally preempted by Red Sox baseball. And the Sox will come back to the East Coast next week. We'll have a full show on Monday, and it'll be back to short shows for a while. But it's been fun having this full hour to us almost every night this week. Something that we talked about last week on Thursday was Sonny Gray of the Yankees. And Sonny Gray of the Yankees is going to pitch tonight. And he's really struggled this year. He's got a 6.92 ERA in his first four outings. His first three outings, rather. He's only lasted more than four innings one time. Sonny Gray is going to amend his mechanics today. And usually I'm not a fan of changing mechanics because pitchers especially, but players of all positions in all sports are creatures of habit and creatures of discipline. And it's all of a sudden very, very difficult to change something. Remember Tim Tebow couldn't change the way he threw. That's part of the reason why he couldn't be an NFL quarterback. I'm not a huge fan of tinkering with mechanics, but in this case, I'm okay with it. I don't believe that the problem for Sonny Gray is entirely mechanical. I believe that the problem with Sonny Gray is entirely mental. Sonny Gray, as we told you last week, he pitches defensive. He's a guy who goes deep into counts. He doesn't trust his stuff, and that's why the Yankees have been so frustrated with him. Remember last week, I played the clip. Buster Olney told us last October that the reason why Sonny Gray did not get the ball for the Yankees in Game 5 of the American League Division Series against Cleveland was because he pitches too defensive. He doesn't trust his stuff. His stuff is electric. He's 92 to 95 with a dynamite curveball and a good changeup. For some reason, he wants to nibble at the corners and gets behind in the count. When you get behind in the count, you get hit or you walk guys, and then everything compounds, and that's where you get numbers like 6.92 ERA. I don't really believe that Sonny McGray's biggest problem is physical, but if he believes it, and he believes that attitude-wise, that adjustment is going to change things for him, then I'm all for it. Because Sonny Gray needs to get in a position where he is willing to challenge hitters and understand it's okay to give up hits. It's okay to let the ball get put in play. And sometimes it will get hit hard, and sometimes it will get hit far. But more often than not, guys put the ball in play, it's an out. And Sonny Gray doesn't seem to believe that. So whatever mechanical issue he tries to fix tonight, I think it will help him mentally, because that's really where his biggest issue is. If he thinks a change will help him, then I'm all for it, because that psyche is what I thought was wrong with him in the first place. You know, it's funny because it's contrary. I see him in a lot of the same way that Red Sox fans should see Rick Porcello. Because Rick Porcello last year was a guy who had the most walks of his career, and he gave up a ton of hits. And I've told you my mantra: you can give up walks, you can give up hits, you cannot give up both. If you are a pitcher, you can give up walks, you can give up hits, you cannot give up both. And Rick Porcello last year gave up both. He gave up the most hits in baseball, the most home runs allowed in baseball, and the most walks of his career. And that's where you get an ERA that's, you know, plus 4.5. This year, Rick Porcello was trusting his stuff. Rick Porcello's got one walk right now this season. One walk this season. I read something else fascinating on Porcello today, and I read it in The Athletic. And Rick Porcello last year, like when he came to Boston, he was known as a sinker ball pitcher. Well, last year, he threw under 30% of his pitches were sinkers. And you say, ah, Brady, no big deal, right? Well, actually, Brady, very, very big deal. He doesn't throw as many sinkers. He throws other pitches. Those other pitches get hit, and they get hit really high and really far, and that's why he gives up 38 home runs. This year, what has he done? He's gone back to the sinker. He throws the sinker at he throws it at a much higher rate. And now he gets nearly 50% ground balls. Ball hit on the ground doesn't go over the fence. So when you don't walk anybody, he's given up one walk this year. You don't walk anybody. And you're throwing that sinker and you're getting 50% ground balls. So now, balls aren't hit in the air. Balls aren't hit for home runs. Balls aren't hit for doubles. I'll take you getting 3 ground balls to score one run off me. I will take that. I will live with that if I'm Rick Porcello. That's what exactly the recipe he needs for success. And if I'm Sonny Gray, I'm looking at that and saying, attack the strike zone. Be down in the strike zone. Trust my great stuff, and then I have a chance to be successful. Champlain Valley Game Night on a Friday, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We'll get to those Red Sox lineups in about 3 minutes, but I am pumped for tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be a very exciting day for me. I'm going to go out to Plattsburgh and see my alma mater, Oswego. Baseball coming to town, Chip Cummings Field to take on the Cardinals. And I've gotten to talk to Coach Dorey a couple times over, who's the head coach at Plattsburgh. So I'm going to have to go over and introduce myself to him formally. I played against him, so we know who each other are, but I've never met him and shaken his hand. So I'll have to go over and see Coach Dorey. But I am pumped to go see Oswego play. And it's amazing how good Oswego's gotten right now. Oswego, when I played there, we were terrible. Simply put, we were terrible. We went 1-17 my junior year, and I played a lot, but as the program is now, I don't even know if I would make this team. Maybe I would, because as the bar got set higher, my own personal bar would get set higher, but I don't know that for a fact. And it's going to be amazing to see this team that was 1-17 my junior year, that whatever, 5 years later, got to the College World Series last season. It's going to be amazing to see them in action and see and witness that turnaround. I've only seen, I think, 2 Oswego games since I graduated, and neither one of them were played at the level that they are now. It's going to be really, really exciting, and it's going to make me, honestly, it's going to take me back and make me wonder about what could have been for my own career. Because I see how hard, or I've heard rather, how hard this team works, and I've seen what this program has become. And I think to myself, it was there all along. And I one of my biggest regrets, I have two big regrets of college. One stems from school and one stems from baseball. That I loved the game, and everything that I have, I owe to of playing baseball. Every connection I've ever made, this job was created by my last job. My last job was created because of the connections I made playing baseball. But for how good I was or could have been, I regret not working as hard as I should have in the weight room and things like that. I love to throw. I love to be on the field. I hated being in the weight room. And as a result, I never fully hit my potential. If you're 6 foot five, you should throw harder than 81 miles an hour. And I never did. So that is, I regret that. Academically, I regret thinking that when I was in broadcasting, that it was all just, oh, you're going to be talented. You don't need to learn how to do anything else. Well, you know what? There's a lot of buttons that need to be pressed and a lot of cameras that need to be run and a lot of production that needs to be done that everybody should know how to do. And for some reason, I seem to think I was never going to need that stuff. Whether it was arrogance or being naive, I never thought I was going to need it. But so those are my two biggest regrets of college, and seeing Oswego tomorrow will remind me of the one. But I am excited. I'm excited to see Coach Baker, who's the assistant coach there, is someone who I played with and someone who has seen it firsthand in both camps. He knows what it was like when we played. He knows how downtrodden the program was. And now he's a part of the turnaround, and I'm proud of him for that. And I'm looking forward to seeing him. So looking forward to being over in Plattsburgh tomorrow. I'm going to definitely stop at Taco Bell, no doubt about that. So if you see me over in Plattsburgh, feel free to say hi. I'll be watching the Lakers and the Cardinals. Red Sox lineups for tonight. Sox taking on the Oakland A's. 10:05 is the first pitch. 9:20 is your pregame show start time. Drew Pomeranz makes his first start of the year for the Sox. And lineup is not out yet. Lineup not out. Kendall Graveman is the pitcher for the A's today. He's 0-3 with a 9.87 ERA. He was pretty good last year, too. He struck for 5 runs on 8 hits and 2 walks in just 4 innings. His last time out, he allowed his 6th home run of the year already. A's hitters don't have a long track record against Drew Pomeranz. Jed Lowrie, who's had a great year, leads the American League in RBIs at last check. He's hitting 500 in 8 at-bats only, though, with a homer. He is the only A's player to have a home run. Nobody has more than Lowry's 8 at-bats. For Graveman, Red Sox have had some decent success in limited sample sizes also. Mitch Moreland has faced him a bunch. He's faced him 12 times, hitting .333 with 2 homers and 5 RBIs. Mookie Betts is 2-for-6. Andrew Benintendi is 1-for-2. But there's a lot of unknowns in this matchup between the two sides. You're going to see some former Lake Monsters on this team for the Oakland A's, though, and there's a bunch of them as well, including catcher Bruce Maxwell, who's out there, Matt Olson, Chad Pinder. So some good stories for former Lake Monsters with the A's. That'll do it for us this week. I'll be in Plattsburgh tomorrow. If you see me again, come say hi. Remember, over the weekend, Celtics tonight, 9 o'clock, 960 The Zone. Bruins on The Zone on Saturday. We'll see you Monday, everybody. 101.3 ESPN.